Thank you for checking out the Ira Kaufman podcast, proudly presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. The summer sales challenge is on at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They're challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest payments on a new Cadillac, like a 2017 ATS for only $369 a month, or a 2017 XT5 for just $399 a month. The summer sales challenge is on. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See the dealer for all the details. And, of course, head over to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Start your car shopping there as well, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. General Manager Brian Danahy is here to tell you that when Ed Morse challenges other dealerships, you win by taking home the lowest prices. Don't miss the Ed Morse Summer Sales Challenge. Drive off in a powerful 2017 Escalade with zero down, only $689 a month. Let us impress you at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher, or click EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. We so appreciate Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, not only for all the great work they do in our Tampa Bay community, but also for presenting all of Ira Kaufman's work on JoeBucksFan.com, his columns three times a week, and these fantastic podcasts, which publish every Tuesday and Thursday, but they're listened to every day on iTunes, at JoeBucksFan.com, at Podbean.com. And let's get right to the custodian of Canton. Happy July 4th on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Ira, as you just heard, all those great Ed Morse offers at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they expire tomorrow. Great day to go shopping. Today, July 4th, at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And Mr. Kaufman, I've been dying to ask you. It's just a personal thing here. You know, we all know that you're from another era of days gone by, the horse and buggy and all that. Growing up in Brooklyn, July 4th, what is a kid in Brooklyn in the 1930s? What are they doing on July 4th?
Lee, another era. It sounds like they're talking about the dinosaurs, the Mesozoic, and then there was a couple other eras there where the dinosaurs walked the earth before the asteroid hit. I'm here to tell you that I have yet to qualify for Medicare, have yet to get my full pension and Social Security, Lee. So let's put things in perspective over here. And I can still knock both of you boys off on the tennis court, of which I'm quite ready to approve. All right, you want to know about July 4th in the city of Brooklyn, the great borough, where I believe you can trace all the impactful people that have ever stalked the earth, all have their roots in Brooklyn somewhere, from Myron Cohn on to Alan King and then the great comedians and Woody Allen and Larry David.
The Stooges.
This is where they come from. They come from Brooklyn, gentlemen.
The Stooges.
They don't come from Dubuque, Iowa. Come on.
The all Stooges right. are from Brooklyn.
The Stooges.
Joe Paterno is from Brooklyn.
I like it.
Al Davis is from Brooklyn.
There we go. So Barbara Streisand, one of our favorites on this broadcast.
Is it Jane Scanwick? Long ago?
Might be Barbara Stanwyck.
Barbara Stanwyck.
All right, anyway, to answer Isbitz's question, July 4th in Brooklyn. Well, we lived kind of near Coney Island. Coney Island. Now, for our listeners that don't know anything about Coney Island, there was a movie, He Got Game, with Denzel Washington. Ray Allen was his son and a hotshot Jesus Shuttleworth. Good movie. And it was shot near Coney Island, very close to where I grew up, in the projects. I lived on the 15th floor, Mr. Isbitz, 1-5. Without an elevator, you were in trouble. Didn't have a car till I was about 18, 20 years old. Took the F train into Manhattan for UPI in New York. And when July 4th rolled around, ooh, that was big time, Lee, big time. You go down to the boardwalk, which is right by Coney Island Beach, and you watch the fireworks. It's all free. Before you do that, you got to go to Nathan's. Anybody ever heard of Nathan's Famous? You grab a hot dog. Now it's about $7. Back then it was a quarter. And you wash it down with a little
knish.
A pickle. Lee, this is the way that all the great people grew up. And I will turn it over to the Kemper for his July 4th, but I don't think you can match Coney Island over there, Lee.
Can't match that, but you didn't go watch John McGraw and the Giants on 4th of July?
No, that was a little bit before my time, my friend, just a little bit. But I did grow up to watch the Mets start in Shea Stadium. I believe they were in another stadium for a couple of years before Shea was built.
Was it the Polo Grounds?
Might have been the Polo Grounds.
It was the Polo Grounds. Ira, weren't you? Didn't you actually cover the 62 Mets for the New York Times?
That's fake news. That's fake news, Isbitz.
No. Fake news is the last podcast with you in the Super Bowl. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have more stories for our listeners. I'm going to think up some more behind-the-scenes stories, Lee. I don't know if I can top that one. Well, I don't know if I can top the John Gruden, which one of those two-yard all-star runs did you like the best? That's going to be tough to beat, too.
Before Lee, I know you were rolling to him with his July 4th. So wait a minute here. So are kids lighting off fireworks in the streets? Do you have access to fireworks? Are you?
We had places to go to get the good stuff, Lee. And then by that, I don't mean a little pack of firecrackers. I'm talking M80s and the famous cherry bombs. You had to be careful with
these.
Were these
legal, or was this some guy named Vito down the road in the garage?
Some guy looked like Joe Pesci, and you give him $20 and he loads up your shopping bag over there. Absolutely not legal. And if you're not watching what you're doing, you lose a pinky finger. You know, we were we were Jason Pierre-Paul before he got there, Lee.
Much like your cousin, Four Fingers Lefty Kaufman.
Don't bring my ancestors into this, Steve. But look, there were a lot of fireworks around and powerful ones. We're not talking about Roman candles. We're not talking about little packs of fireworks. These could bring down half a country over here if you're not careful. That's when I learned rule number one. You got to be very careful whether you're handling fireworks or writing a buck story. You better be very careful. Lee, what the heck did they do in Pennsylvania or wherever the heck you were?
Listen to this. It's a good one. Southern Illinois. Pretty boring.
Southern Illinois.
Yeah, Southern Illinois is pretty boring until you get to turn 21 and drink beer. The coolest thing was, in Illinois, state of Illinois, fireworks are illegal. Can't sell them outside of really, really lame stuff like sparklers or something like that. So the cottage industry was people would drive to Missouri and buy a couple $100 worth of fireworks.
There you go.
And then the salesman, shall we say, on the black market would pull in the middle of town, open up his trunk, and like, okay, what do you want? You know, he'd make a killing. My dad would take me to a fireworks show. That family member, they lived across the street from a park where they had a fireworks display. My dad didn't like fireworks. Not so much, you know, he didn't like firecrackers and stuff like that, but he never got off on fireworks displays. And he always said, oh, you see one, you see them all. And I just got a hunch it had something to do with his World War II experience. I don't know that, but I just have a hunch. Because he kept saying one of the fireworks reminded him of an artillery shell off his ship. He goes, it sounds just like a nine inch shell, he would say. And so I got a hunch it had something to do with his World War II experience, and he didn't want to revisit.
Lee, that leads us to Mr. Isbitz on the streets of Jersey with his sparklers, obviously his parents didn't trust him with anything beyond sparklers. You got anything to add to this conversation?
I really got nothing good. I got no juice here. My dad was a fireworks guy.
You're eating a snow cone on July 4th.
I wasn't really into that, but he and my brother had this whole firecrackers thing. And
any accidents? Any mishaps?
No accidents. Usually some good sounds coming out of the trash cans, whatever they did
in
the trash
cans. And your mother in the background saying, be careful, be careful.
She was in the house. There was always some wild stuff with the trash cans. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but it made some serious sounds.
Yeah. We had a guy named Joey Lobianco in the neighborhood. Do I have to say anything more than that, Steve? Joey Lobianco, he had the best stash of fireworks every year. You know, he'd go the extra yard, go the extra mile. And we'd all gather around them, and we'd all go down to the boardwalk right by the beach where, 80-year-old guys are playing handball. And no, I was not one of them, Stephen. And these fireworks, they'd last 2-3 hours. Pitch dark. You got the beautiful Coney Island sky, Lee, with the smog, you know.
The beautiful Coney Island sky. I can't let that one slip through.
That's a line that can't get past this. But Joey Lobianco was the man. And Joey, if you're listening, call us and let us know where you are.
This is going to be, right up with Muriel Berkowitz. This is Joey Lobianco.
Joey Lobianco. I'm going to get two T-shirts, one for each person.
My mom was big, liked the big fireworks shows. So sometimes we go to the local town show, or usually haul ass somewhere else to go. Nothing too exciting. The day off, though, man, I played basketball with my dad during the day. It was always a big thing, get out there and run the drills.
What kind of sports did we have on July 4th? You know what we
baseball.
Had? We had Wimbledon. We had Wimbledon.
Absolutely. Breakfast at Wimbledon, sure.
Sometimes breakfast at Wimbledon. Sometimes it was the final. You know, you get Borg and McEnroe going at it in 1980 or 81 over a bagel and lox. I mean, that's a strong weekend.
80,
over there,
81.
Lee.
You're 80, almost
81.
You're almost retired by then. Come on, Ira.
If I remember correctly, it was sports memory on 4th of July when I was a kid. There used to be a Cardinals pitcher who was young guy, just rookie or second year, showed some promise.
Wasn't Joe McGrain, was it?
I want to say Scipio Spinks.
Scipio Spinks.
And on 4th of July, might have been playing the Reds, day game, he completely blows a stop sign at third base, slides into the plate. Again, I want to say it's the Reds. I'm not sure if it was Reds. Obviously, it was Johnny Bench. Slides in, collision, blows out his knee, end of his career.
What a memory for DeKemper over there, Steve.
Yeah,
outstanding.
Never heard that name. Interesting one to look up. All right, Ira.
He can't remember what he had for lunch yesterday, Steve. Scipio Spinks, he's ready. All right, on to the Bucks, my man. Right.
So, you know, everybody saw the headline for this podcast, grading Jason Light, grading a general manager. You've written this many times, Ira, and it's a reality. General manager Jason Light is looking for a contract extension. Doesn't have one. There's a reason he doesn't have one. We don't know the exact reason. Maybe they've been negotiating. Maybe they're apart on money.
Maybe it'll happen even before training camp or during training camp. It could.
Correct. Maybe Team Glazer wants to see a fourth year. Maybe they want to see a fourth year and what that looks like for Jason Light. So my broad question to you, Ira, I'm going to tell you in advance. I'm going to be needling you here, needling the crap out of you to really dig into the evaluation process. But I'll ask you generally first. What is fair? What's on the table? What do you weight most when you're evaluating a general manager like Jason Light, who's entering his fourth season?
I believe, Stephen, that the number one characteristic that you're looking for, the number one priority, the talent level of the roster, the overall talent level of the roster, and whether there's a core of young players going forward. If your best players are 32, you're in a lot of trouble. I don't care what sport you're in. On that regard, Steve, the Bucks are in a lot better shape than when Jason Lightly came on board in 2014 with a first-year coach named Lovie Smith. You go right to the draft. Now, Steve, there's two ways to acquire talent. Draft, free agency. Free agency, Jason Light is not going to stake his claim on his free agent haul. It's been a little better of late. We'll see how Chris Baker does. We'll see about DeSean Jackson. But nobody's arguing with Brent Grimes, gentlemen. Nobody. Nothing wrong with that. Other guys have been capable fill-ins. He found Cameron Brait. He finds some other people. But it's the draft. It's the draft, Lee, that has fueled the infusion of talent at Dirk Cutter's disposal. And that's why, Steve, even if the Bucks go 7-9 in 2017, which the three of us don't think they will, but if they do, and it's not because of a Jameis Winston injury, that doesn't necessarily mean Jason Light did a poor job. If some of these rookies continue to make an impact, I think what I'm saying is the 7-9, I think at this point, will be more of a reflection on Cutter than it is on Light, because I don't even think Dirk Cutter could say he doesn't have a strong talent level. So I'm judging Light on the talent on the roster, and when I look around, this is a talented roster.
I agree with you, Ira. I mean, Cutter's even said it himself during rookie minicamp, I believe it was. He said this roster was, and I quote here, by far. That's a direct quote from Dirk Cutter. The roster is, quote unquote, by far better than when he first arrived. And I have an intermission real quick here. Friends of mine back home in Illinois always say, man, you got a memory like an elephant, the stuff you remember. I pulled up Wikipedia here. Scipio Spinks. Let me read a quick paragraph. Spinks was exceptionally fast for a pitcher, and for that reason, the Cardinals frequently used him as a pinch runner. His career was drastically altered on July 4th, 1972. While scoring from first on a double, he ran into Cincinnati Reds catcher Johnny Bench in a collision at home plate.
Man, what a memory. I mean, I was only 6 years old, Steve. How am I supposed to remember
in 1972?
That was outstanding.
You're older than me.
Now continue, because you're agreeing with me on Jason Light, so you may continue.
I mean, you know, if the Bucks, barring an injury to Jameis Winston, do not fare well this year, that would be on Cutter. And I think Cutter has all but admitted it. He's like, this roster is by far better than it has been since I arrived. So he sort of set himself up for failure. I hate that's kind of drastic saying that, but he's on record as saying the roster's good.
Steve, it's up to the coaches to utilize and maximize the talent.
Right.
To put the I'm not finished yet, Isbitz.
Go ahead.
To put the players in the position to succeed and build your scheme around the talent around you, which other Buck coaches have failed to do in the past. And I'm talking about you, Lovie Smith, in particular. I just asked Levante David. So I'm going to go right to the talent, and I know you're going to disagree on some of these points, Isbits, but this is a pretty good roster right here. Pretty good.
Okay, so you basically said talent level is number one in evaluating the general manager. Level of talent supersedes actual production on the field. So what you're saying, I want to clarify, 7-9 with this roster of talent, that's on Dirk Cutter. That's what you're saying.
I think it's primarily on Dirk Cutter. Yeah.
Okay, so now the Glaze, and then you said obviously the draft is paramount in the whole grand scheme because you got to have that young core that you're going in the right direction. So my question to you is the Glazers, Team Glazer, who's evaluating the talent for the Glazers, right? If they're evaluating Jason Light, are they the ones sitting back looking at the roster saying, oh, we like these guys, we like this roster, or are they bringing in a consultant?
They have How their go-to guys, Lee. I don't think there's any question about it. The Glazers do reach out
Bob Kraft
to people. It might have been Belichick on occasion.
Well, Belichick, didn't he not give a reference to Greg Schiano?
Yes. they've got some people that they trust, that they go to. And, you know, these guys, they know just enough about football to be dangerous. I mean, they're longtime football observers, mm-hmm. even fans. I think they grew up as Dolphin fans, self-admitting. They love the Dolphins, basically. And they know their football. They're not ignoramuses when it comes to football. But they also have their go-to people, their consultants. And I'll tell you what, if they ask the stick carriers or the three of us, we'll be glad to chime in that this is a lot better roster than it was in the offseason going into 2014. Oh. A lot better.
Do you mind if I compliment Ira?
Of course.
The phrase you coined in your recent column, actually not recent, but last week, Unholy Trio. That was beautiful. And for our listeners who didn't catch that, that was in reference to Raheem Morris, Greg Schiano, and Lovie Smith, Ira coined as the Unholy Trio.
Who combined for 7 years of coaching, three guys, when John Gruden himself lasted 7 years on the Bucs sidelines.
All right, so back to Jason Light, Ira. When you're evaluating, so the Glazers have consultants. So you're saying what we're saying here is football people that they say, hey, look,
do we have enough talent to win? What do you
think of our roster and where it is and where it's gone in the last year or two? You know, look, give us a look. Whoever that might be, we have no clue, but they've got their consultants. Okay, I like that. And sure, obviously the Glazers have football knowledge. I don't even think you need to say that.
Steve, another way to look at it. Sorry to interrupt, Steve.
No, please do. It's Eric Kaufman's podcast.
How many guys are in line for second contracts? That's a big deal. That's a big deal around here because under your rock star general manager, who I call Mark 28-52 Dominic, I'm going to continue to say that because those are the facts, and for most of the Gruden-Allen, reign of terror or error, they didn't draft well either, and Dominic didn't draft well.
Saying Bruce Allen didn't draft well is being polite.
Now, Steve, they would say, we were bereft of top draft picks because of what we paid for Gruden. So
that's to blame for Sammy Piscitelli being
a
second round pick.
All right,
well, let me cut you off for a second here, Ira. So we didn't have a good drafting era with Gruden and Bruce Allen. We didn't have a good drafting era with Mark Dominic. So why doesn't Jason Light
have a playoff draft?
Why doesn't Light have a new contract yet?
Well, they haven't made the playoffs yet.
Okay, so let's go to winning. So where does winning factor into all this?
Well, it's the cherry on top of the apple pie over there.
Who the hell puts cherries on apple pie?
In Brooklyn, we do it all the time over there, Lee. Look, I think, would you be shocked if Light has a new contract before training camp? I mean, would that
I wouldn't be shocked if it's already done. They just haven't announced it yet.
You know, the man has drafted very well, Lee. He's drafted very well. And I'm not counting O.J. Howard. He hasn't played it down yet. I'm not counting J.J. Wilcox. But I thought Hargraves played pretty darn well for a rookie last year.
Sure, I do too.
Noah Spence is not a bum. He's not a bust. And then, of course, you know, you got the unbelievable Harvest in 2015. That's one of the great drafts in Buck history.
Oh, of course.
I mean, 90-95 will always be, you know, the standard.
Yeah, two Hall of Famers.
Two Hall of Famers. And the story.
Legitimate question. How much of a, I don't know, stain is the right word, or drag? Light was part of the Lovie Smith debacle. Obviously, Lovie Smith had control of the roster. Light was pretty much a yes man when it came to the roster. That was Lovie's call. Although Jason was in charge of the draft, I'm sure Lovie said, no, I don't want this guy. Jason, you know, I don't want this guy. I'm willing to lay money on that. Let's put it that way. How much of a factor is that in the issue that Light does not yet have a
contract. He's not part of the Lovie Smith debacle, Steve, in terms of hiring Lovie Smith. He did not hire Lovie Smith. He did not hire Greg Schiano. He was a big factor in hiring Cutter, yes, because I think he now has more power. And let's talk about that for a second, Steve. The Glazers have gone on record saying he has more clout than he had before, and maybe other Buck general managers have had, and I'm including Bruce Allen in that, because I think Gruden was really running football operations.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
Steve, they're on record saying that Light has more power. So wouldn't that lead you to believe Light's about to get a contract extension? I think it does. And by the way, Lee, to go to your point about Lovie Smith and Light's role in his demise, 2015 draft, he found Lovie Smith four starters.
Yes.
Two offensive linemen, a middle linebacker, and, of course, Jameis Winston. Now, Steve, we'd be amiss here if we didn't say that the drafts of the last couple of years and some of the nice free agent pickups, Cutter's had a hand in. Cutter's had a role. But
no question, they rolled Howard.
Ultimately, Light has pulled the trigger on it, so I'm gonna give him most of the credit.
Well, Light's got more responsibility, more power in the regime. So sure, Daryl Smith, yeah, he came here because he knows Mike Smith and Cutter and felt comfortable. So and he was successful last year. Probably same things. The reason Brent Grimes comes here is a comfort level with the coaching staff because he had the pick of the litter. We knew that, or we heard that from Miko. We heard that Rex Ryan told me that, you know, everybody wants this guy. He just could never afford him, and so.
Maybe Robert Ayers.
Is surely a Light kind of guy. But, yeah, they work together. Light's got power. Let me go back, because you sort of mentioned it, Ira, and Lee was pretty definitive, and I think the opposite. I'll start with Lee. Lee said he wouldn't be shocked if Light already had a contract. And I would be shocked, because I think that's something the Bucks would want to put out there. They'd want to take the idiots like us, and I use that term in a friendly way, idiots like us, talking about this, is he going to get a contract and all that. It's a nice feather, public feather for Light among his peers.
In a dead time of year.
Whatever it is, it's a good feather for him to have that kudos across the nation. It lets the players know, hey, the guys in charge here are in charge and we're full steam ahead. And it's just a positive thing. I think they wouldn't hold it back. It's just my opinion.
Yeah,
not going anywhere.
Well, wouldn't hold it back, but when have the Glazers done something specifically because of media reaction?
Well, you could argue a lot. I mean, they did publicly come out and say that they got one of the reasons they got rid of Gruden is because their surveys of fans and the pulse of the team was that people were done with Gruden. I believe them on that. I really do believe that they thought, people are fried on Gruden. You got Steve Dumig killing them and the fans.
Well, that clearly wasn't primary reason to get rid of Gruden.
Well,
not primary.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. They don't primarily do something just for media.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I just meant, though, just as a stroke to Jason Light and, you know, hey, here's a new deal. We'll take a picture.
And
we
that would be
you.
Smart.
You
know, dead period of time. I completely agree with you there, but I was just talking primarily. They don't make a decision primarily for media reaction.
No, definitely not.
Steve, one point you have not mentioned.
I got a lot here.
All right. which I think is significant. And Joel Glazer said this to me in March. He probably said it to you again in March in Phoenix. But the working relationship, Lee, between Light and Cutter, the Glazers look at that GM-coach relationship as critical. Absolutely critical. Maybe as critical as the offensive coordinator, Jameis Winston, relationship.
Kidding.
And I think by all accounts, from what we've seen, and we're around there a lot, they're primarily on the same page, Light and Cutter. Seems that way. You know, two guys, I think they both have a lot of confidence in what they have. Both have a lot of self-confidence. They've both waited a long time for their shot. You know, Light to be in charge of football operations, Cutter to be a head coach in the National Football League. They've put a lot of time in, Lee. This is their shot. And I don't see a lot of friction between those two at this point.
Did Joel Glazer specifically say they like that relationship that those two have?
Yes, he did. He said it's a very positive relationship. They don't always agree, but they work it out between themselves and they don't hold any grudges.
Well, now that you mention that, there are some similarities in their football personality. I've heard Cutter reference, you know, wing it. Let it go as far as, you know, go for the gusto. Do it, you know, just recently he was up in Idaho. And they, you know, he's a celebrity in Pocatello. Is that correct?
Yeah, Pocatello.
And he said, you know, they any advice for a young coach? He goes, basically grip it and rip it. Let it go. Do it, you know. And Light is the kind of guy, he makes bold moves. We've all seen that.
That's an excellent point by DeKemper. They're both on the bold side.
Yeah, and Light definitely loves personality in players. He thinks personality brings out a better athlete because they have a passion generally. He thinks the type A personalities are more inclined to work their tail end off to be a better self. You know, that's a Raheem Morris line, be your better self. And so I think there's some football personality traits that they have in common. So it's interesting to hear that.
You know, I don't want to pick on Alter and Werner, but we know Werner. We were around him a lot for a couple of years. And, Steve, if you got 53 Alter and Werners in terms of personality in your locker room, that doesn't work. You need some Quan Alexanders out there.
Oh, sure. I think Light was very much stifled in some ways by the Lovie Smith regime, which was not bold. You know, launch with Josh McCown as your quarterback.
Don't want to score points.
And that's how you start your regime with Josh McCown.
I mean, a bold move is drafting a rookie and let's develop this kid and build something here right out of the gate. The second year of Jason Light's free agency, the Henry Meltons and the Bruce Carters and the Chris Contes, that's not bold. That's the opposite of bold.
Which tells you who was in charge.
And, you know, I understand that they had screwed up and Light had a big hand in screwing up free agency the first time around in 2014, but I think Light has sort of been able to be himself in these last two drafts and two off seasons. So, and it's working. So I think that's a good thing. But let's go back to Jason Light and his decisions in 2014 and 2015. Are they relevant to Team Glazer in evaluating this guy for a new contract? What he did in under Lovie and in free agency specifically?
I don't think they will be any factor, Lee, if the arrow continues to go up. If the arrow continues to go up, which is a big phrase from the Glazers, mm-hmm. that they use that. Which way's the arrow? And even though the Bucks lost two out of their last three games in 2016, when the season ended, the arrow was going up for the franchise. And that's big. So barring a step backwards this fall, those mistakes, and there were a bunch of them, in free agency, Lee. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to downplay it. You know, Anthony Collins still sticks in my craw. Lee, not just because the guy couldn't play, but he was a bad guy. He was a bad locker room guy.
Oh, he was a bad guy.
A bad teammate, Steve. And why didn't they know that about him? Why didn't they do their research about
him?
The
bigger question. Now, to me, even, Ira, that's, I get the Collins thing, and I know he's like your most hated player of the last 8 years. But what really compounds that is cutting Donald Penn to sign Anthony Collins.
Ding,
that,
ding, ding,
that,
ding,
that's
ding,
a
ding,
mind blower.
And Penn's still going strong, Steve.
Penn was known as a good locker room guy, hadn't missed a game.
Had a lot of pride. A lot of pride.
Not the perfect player, but surely a team first guy. And look what he's gone on to do. He's been excellent since he left. So
he's a real spokesman for the Raiders now.
That's kind of that's nasty level of failure in that one spot right there. And then, but here's the thing, the Glazers know that that has a ripple effect, right? Because if Donald Penn is still here, use that pick on Donovan Smith somewhere else. And who knows who that could have been. Now, I'll say this about Jason Light. I'm probably going to do this for a story later this month, but I was looking up the second round picks of that 2015 draft, and you could make a case that Smith and Marpet are the best second round picks of 2015. Which says a lot for Light.
Of 32 picks.
Out of those 32 picks in that round, and which is interesting from an evaluation consultant Glazer standpoint that you
And you could argue that Jameis Winston is the best pick of the opening round. Even now, granted, it was the first pick in the draft. I understand that. But it looks like they got it right.
Lee. Oh, of course. Hey, can I share some intel?
Please.
All right.
Got anything to do with Coney Island? No, okay. All right,
maybe a person that belongs on Coney Island. But during the Lovie Smith regime, the staff got together. When I say staff, all the football movers and shakers got together, and they were looking at potential free agents. Obviously, they were looking at Ghost Johnson. They were either going to sign Ghost Johnson, and the name escapes me. I saw a highlight of him last night on NFL Network, a Minnesota defensive end that you and I, Steve, had pimped for.
Everson Griffin. Good player.
Well, in this staff meeting was a gentleman by the name of Leslie Frazier, who I love. Good guy. What I'm going to say is maybe an example of why he's not a head coach anymore. He was coaching at Minnesota. And when the name Everson Griffith came up, he's, I wouldn't do it. I'd stay away from him because Leslie had coached him. And I thought, well, Leslie knows the guy better than anybody
intel.
In this room.
He's got intel. Yeah.
Sure.
And look what happened.
I'm not sure what that means necessarily. Are you going to bank 100% on Leslie Frazier? And Griffin re-signed with his own team. They probably couldn't have signed him anyway. But I get what you're saying is the regime had some bad intelligence in the building.
From a guy with first-hand knowledge of Griffin.
Right, right. And it would be impossible not to believe the guy, which is where you could sort of get light off the hook there. But let's look at the guy they did sign, which is
ouch.
Which is ultimately they cut the check for that guy, and he didn't. We later found out, and the Glazers read it on JoeBucksFan.com because they didn't read it anywhere else. His agent came out in an interview shortly after that and said, "Well, Michael didn't want to be there. Michael Johnson, he missed Cincinnati, and he really never wanted to go to Tampa. What the hell did you sign the guy for?
He took their money, Steve. He took the Bucks' money. But again, like you said." You know, they end up with Noah Spence.
Elite. It worked out in the long
just
run.
Just like Bruce Carter, they end up with, end up with Alexander. But yeah. Bruce Carter, in retrospect, that's a bad signing. The guy's made zero impact in the NFL.
And
zero.
And let's be real on Bruce Carter. That's Lovie Smith watching the film on Bruce Carter. Talking
he had five sacks or something.
Talking to his best friend, Rod Marinelli, who said, vouch for the guy. And
we assume Marinelli vouched for him. We don't know that.
Well, we have to assume. I mean, why would Lovie sign him?
Stated.
But
just,
you're right. We
just a little bit ago, Leslie. Yeah. So.
Now, Steve, you have not mentioned the 5'7" elephant in the room in terms of Jason Light, and that's Roberto Aguayo. Having said that, Lee, we can't close the book on Roberto Aguayo. That's not fair.
No,
he's going to get a chance in training camp. I believe all three of us.
You almost have him written off. Oh, he'll get a chance.
No. I believe all three of us feel he has to outkick Nick Folk, perhaps even significantly. But he has to outkick him. He has to outperform him. Otherwise, he's not going to be on this roster.
I'm on record saying he's got to be perfect.
All right. So the question that begs the question: if Aguayo is not on the roster of the 2017 Bucks, what kind of stain is that on Jason Light's record? It's a stain because. They could have took another player.
There's a headline. It's a stain.
Well, they could have taken.
They could have taken another player.
The defensive end of Jacksonville guy as a rookie, who I know, Bucks people loved coming in the draft. Defensive end. His name escapes me. Hey, I'm bad
it's
with
not
names.
Scipio Spinks.
No, that's Scipio Spinks.
Yannick something Yannick. Or other. He had seven sacks as a rookie.
He would have been number two on the Bucks had they drafted him last year.
Steve, if you move up to the second round, take a kicker, which is already a controversial move. The guy's got to be good.
It's a stain, as you say. It's a stain. It's a more high-profile stain, but it's less of a stain if Folk has a good season.
And the Bucks have a good season. You know, nobody's going to be talking about it.
I mean, if you replace the stain with a guy who's top-notch, well, then who cares? Nobody cares about the stain. But I get what you're saying. But it's no more of a stain than Austin Seferian Jenkins. Same level of...
One of these days.
Again, I think a question of not doing enough homework on Seferian Jenkins.
He didn't need homework for this clown. That's another story.
You know, talent unquestioned. The guy's got talent.
This is
so many guys have talent, Steve. It's not enough.
This is where measurables get you in trouble. The measurables on this guy was off the charts. Well, what did the film say? What did his head say in particular? Measurables get you in trouble. There's a guy. He's been commenting on our site. He's been commenting on Joe Bucks fans since probably the first week Steve and I started. And he's always harping on Hargraves because he's not tall enough. And I told him, I said, be careful. That's a measurables issue. That was Mark Dominic. He was big on measurables. And I remember someone, an NFL executive, had told me, who's the great linebacker for Oakland right now? Outside linebacker. I was told by his NFL executive at the combine when he was coming out, he said his tape is unreal. He said analytics say bust. Measurables. Bill Parcells always said, go back to the film. Go back to the film. And when I told this to the guy, I referenced Mark Dominic. Oh, that hurts, Mark Dominic. So measurables get you in trouble.
Hargraves is as tall as Brent Grimes. Steve, Brent Grimes. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Brent Grimes.
Doesn't matter. He's
but in and of itself, doesn't mean he can't have a long career as a 5'10".
Vernon Hargraves told me at the combine, if you can ball, you can ball. That's my favorite quote. One of my favorite quotes of all times. If you can ball, you can ball.
I think you're going to see a considerably more impactful season from Vernon Hargraves.
Well, the stat geeks always point to all the targets that Hargraves had. Well, no kidding. On the other side was Brett Grimes. What imbecile of a quarterback would throw at Brent Grimes when you got a rookie out there. Come on.
Out there, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jason Light or any other general manager, these guys spend so much time on this stuff that they do fall in love with measurables. I mean, just Light even uttering the phrase, the Duncaneers, that was all about measurables and how we were supposed to be impressed by measurables. Drew Brees' measurables aren't too good, and he look at him.
Measurables are okay on a third-day draft pick.
Speaking of third-day draft pick, or actually,
oh, that's a great segue.
Second-day draft pick, actually really secondary, so I take that back. You know, I think in the evaluation process, if the Glazers do let this go to the end of the season, and if they just simply say very kindly, Jason, we love what you're doing, love your relationship with Dirk, everything's going in the right direction, I wouldn't be worried, but we're going to wait till the end of the season, and we're going to pay you accordingly. So if that's the case, I think Charles Sims is also a very interesting case here. When you look at the record of Jason Light, because when you draft a running back in the third round, a running back, that guy is supposed to be able to be an impact running back, a guy who, bottom line, impact, whether he's plenty of starters are drafted in the third round or plenty of impact guys. And we saw Sims be a fantastic impact guy 2 years ago. Last year, one great game, injuries, nothing. This year's a big year for Charles Sims, and if he can produce, if he goes back to 2015, all of a sudden Bucks fans will be looking at the 2014 draft and saying, "Man, they got Mike Evans and Charles Sims, unbelievable!" This Jason Light,
they got Panfield in that draft too.
Panfield too. So that becomes a phenomenal draft.
That's a good point, Steve.
But you know, if Sims is the same guy as last year, and Panfield takes a little step back, all of a sudden 2014 looks like, well, hey, any idiot could have drafted
Evans. You wonder how many touches Sims is going to get if McNichols is the real deal. McNichols supposed to be a heck of a pass catcher, and that's kind of Sims' forte, Lee.
I think there's a whole lot of factors going into how many touches Sims gets. I mean, does Doug Martin come back? And if he comes back, is he, you know, we all know Doug Martin's a boom or bust guy. Is he the boom Doug Martin, or is he, all sorts of factors are involved here about Charles Sims.
And Jacquizz Rodgers wasn't on the roster when Sims had his big year as a change of pace.
No, Light has an out when it comes to the Charles Sims. If the Glazers are in negotiations with him and they finger him for Charles Sims and Charles Sims is a lousy year, Light has an out. I think we spoke about this before, but in a staff meeting going through the draft, the Buck scout said, you know, this guy reminds me of Matt Forte. It's all love he needed to hear. It's all love. He was in love with him from that point on. And by the way, I gotta admit this. I'm as hard on Lovie Smith as I thought that guy. Oh, my gosh, he was brutal. And I have no shame in saying that. I have no shame in saying he's lazy from the stories I hear. That's just the fact that he, you know, you had to run his scheme or you didn't fit. And, that's lazy coaching, period, in a sentence.
And you didn't like the staff he put together either, Lee.
And most of the staff was pretty loud. Although, as Steve pointed out, Cutter retained most of the offensive staff. So can, but to Lovie's credit, Lovie's ultimate credit, the only thing he had to say was no to Jameis. One word, no, and Jameis wouldn't be here. To Lovie's credit, he signed off on Jameis. And for as long as Jameis is with this team, I will thank Lovie for that. Lovie made three.
You're also thanking him for tanking.
Yes. Well, that's number four. I was going to say, Lovie only did three things right as a coach with the Bucks, which is pretty horrible through 3 years. He only did three things right. Well, actually, four things now. Number four.
Two years.
Number four was tanking.
He had 2 years.
It seemed like three. It was so long.
There you go.
Tanking would be number four. Number one, hiring Light. Number two, hiring Cutter. Number three, okaying Jameis.
It's all this stuff's fascinating to me because it cuts all different ways. So if we want to accept the premise that Light's off the hook on Charles Sims if he stinks, then you can't put him in his plus column
He's
good.
That's very true.
So it goes all, you know, it's interesting. And then there's a question of what do the Glazers really know? What is Light, what kind of power did he really wield? And, you know, all the nuances of that power. And
what's Light's role, gentlemen?
Under Lovie.
And Dirk Cutter being promoted to replace Lovie Smith. He was a factor.
You would think so.
But ultimately, the Glazers are always the ones that pick the head coach. Always. That's where they step in. Because to them, the coach is the face of the organization.
Sure.
That's the way they look at it. So, Steve, are you saying that they totally turned over the coaching search to replace Lovie Smith to Jason Light? Are you willing to go there?
Of course not. I think it's just such a no-brainer that...
So Light rubber stamped it, basically.
I don't even think... Well, I mean, sure, they asked Jason, you know, what do you think of Dirk? And he said, I think Dirk's phenomenal. You know, and he's got a good plan to hire a great defensive coordinator, because that's always part of the decision. And Jameis, how could anybody in their bright mind stick Jameis with a new offensive coordinator in his second year? I mean,
of a record franchise record breaking offense, right?
Well, they weren't franchise record. Well, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was just silly.
Here you go, Steve. You know, you were talking about you can't have it both ways with Terrell Sims and Jason Light. Actually, you can. If Terrell Sims has a great year, you know, he can tell the Glazers, look, I'm the one that got the coach. Who knows how to use him?
I'm not as down on Terrell Sims as you guys, especially Lee.
I'm not down on him. I didn't expect that much from him to begin with. But
guys, coming off week one last year, Terrell Sims was the man. Terrell Sims was the star in Atlanta. A dazzling touchdown.
Yeah,
dazzling.
Yeah, but let's see that more than once every 3 months. I mean, come on.
He seems a little injury prone, guys. He does.
He is.
He seems a little injury prone. He was not an effective runner last year.
He's a terrible runner.
I can't argue with that.
He's a terrible runner. Can't run between the tackles.
See, I try to couch it. And he wasn't effective.
He's a Bruno Mars backup dancer on the edge.
He averaged 4.9 yards a carry in 2015, Mr. DeKemper. He did.
That was and who was the Pro Bowler that year?
Doug Martin.
Look, Sims has been hurt 2 out of 3 years. This is his year. If he's hurt again,
bye-bye.
He's a bust.
And he's gone.
And everybody will put the big B on him, rightfully so. If he goes back to close to what he did in 2015, hey, what a great complimentary role player here. This guy, catch the ball. He's electric. He can win you a game a year with some of his exploits. And so he's a big X factor this year. All right, Kaufman. EdmoresCadillacTampa.com, EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. That's the place to be. Yeah, I know there's so many people putting off their car shopping. It's July. How long are you going to put it off? Get your search started there. And speaking of search, iTunes has all of Ira's podcasts. You can search there. Just search Ira Kaufman or Bucks or Buccaneers. You're going to find all the podcasts. You can go back and listen to part 1, 2, and part 3 of Dirk Cutter. We've got parts 4 and 5 coming up next week.
You got the joint one with the commish, Steve, from last week.
You can find Bucks Uncensored, of course, the same way. Just search Bucks. You'll see it. And Ira made a couple of appearances with the commish. And that's really about it, Kaufman, for this edition. You got any fireworks now for today?
I want to wish everybody out there in Buckland a happy and safe holiday. Lee, keep listening to these podcasts. Keep reading the website. You guys do an unbelievable job of keeping the stories churning, keeping them fresh. You know what? To say that we're the go-to spot for Buck News, I don't think that's a stretch anymore, guys.
Yeah, and for the people upset with that, too damn bad. I got to say this real quick, Steve.
I was listening to Pawlowski's
podcast. I know that's not the name of the podcast. You'll say it, but I still call it Pawlowski's podcast. Stick carriers were unsolicited. Were giving us a lot of props. Outlaw being one. Of course, the OKC boys. Ira, you got to get familiar with something.
I got my man Javier.
Yeah, but in particular, Outlaw, and there was another guy. I didn't catch the name. I apologize. But anyway, I want to thank them for their compliments and telling people on Pawlowski's podcast that they need to go to Joe's Bucks fan every morning. Like one guy said, he goes, I start out with my morning cup of Joe every day, both the liquid and the website.
And Isbitz, you're under a lot of pressure right now because a lot of fans want those podcasts posted nice and early in the morning, Mr. Isbitz. So get that alarm clock going. They don't want to wait till noontime. They want it on their way to work.
No pressure, Ira, no pressure. The podcast is a beautiful thing because you listen whoever you want to. But sure, people love it first thing in the morning on the drive to work. I don't blame them. What the hell else?
Puts them in a good mood, right, Steve?
You know, they want to hear Bucks talk. What else are they going to listen to?
Being the wordsmith you are, Ira, I'm surprised you didn't use the word clamoring.
Clamoring. Don't forget that unholy trio over there, Ellie. I guess people would say we're the unholy trio, Steve.
Oh, I'm sure there's people that say that.
I'm sure there are.
Get out of here, Ira.